All right, take your Bible, find Genesis chapter 40 tonight. Genesis chapter 40. Because I've got plenty of time, I'm going to read the entire chapter. And that way we'll know where we're at and you'll be familiar with the story. Genesis chapter number 40. Had a few things I was going to say about current events. Skip all of that. May say something Sunday about it. Brother Ricky Gravely will be with us on Sunday. And look forward to hearing him preach Sunday morning. Genesis chapter 40. Look at verse number 1. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offended their lord, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in ward in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in ward. They dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker, the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his lord's house, saying, "Wherefore look ye so sadly today?" And they said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." The chief butler told his dream to Joseph, said to him, "In my dream, behold, a vine was before me. And in the vine were three branches, and it was as though it budded. And her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters therefore brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand." And Joseph said unto him, "This is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore thee unto thy place, and thou shalt deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when thou wast his butler. But think on me when it should be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. For indeed I was stolen away out of the land of the Hebrews, and here also have I done nothing that they should put me into the dungeon." When the chief baker saw that the interpretation was good, he said unto Joseph, "I also was in my dream, and behold, I had 3 white baskets on my head. And in the uppermost basket there was of all manner of baked meats for Pharaoh, and the birds did eat them out of the basket upon my head." And Joseph answered and said, "This is the interpretation thereof. The 3 baskets are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thy head from off thee, and shall hang thee on a tree, and the birds shall eat thy flesh from off thee." And it came to pass the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast unto all his servants, and lifted up the head of the chief butler and of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief butler unto his butlership again. And he gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forget him. It's been several weeks since we have been in the life of Joseph. And the last time that we saw him, he had just been put into prison. And we saw how that God had favored him in Potiphar's house and how he had remained faithful through the different tests that he was put to. He had resisted the seduction of Potiphar's wife. She had turned against him and falsely accused him of trying to molest her. And Potiphar had no choice to punish him. And I don't even believe that Potiphar really believed the story, but whether he believes it or not, he has to punish Joseph, and Joseph ends up being put into prison. And we've taken the providence of God as our theme for this story. And we know that in the providence of God, things will soon turn to his good. It has been all trials so far, and all of these trials are just tests. But we expect that the story will take a triumphant turn sooner or later. Nobody writes a story of just tragedy and trial and then it just ends. There's no book like that. Every book that begins with tragedies and trials and all of that, The hardships are set up, but you know that sooner or later you're going to come to a chapter where it all turns. The other morning I was in Waffle House early morning hours, and the waitress that was waiting on me across the counter, she had a tattoo on the inside of her arm there, and it was words, and I couldn't read it. And you know how you're trying to read somebody's tattoo, and so finally I just stopped her. I said, "Hey, I can't read that. Would you stop?" And so she had tattooed, "This too shall pass." And I said, "Oh, that's a Bible verse. That's from the Old Testament." She didn't know that it was from the Bible. She didn't know that she had Bible tattooed on her arm. But I thought about, you know, that could be the theme of every Christian. That no matter what you're going through, this too shall pass. That's the promise that we have, right? It's not always going to be bad. Things will eventually get better. So cheer up. Now, it might get worse before it gets better, but eventually somewhere, there'll be some good news. Because good news, when you read the life of Joseph, you have to begin to wonder, when's that going to happen? You see, you read Genesis chapter 37, and you had the betrayal by his brothers in that whole chapter, and you said, well, just wait till we get chapter 38. But then you get to chapter 38, that's all about Judah and his three sons and Tamar and all of that. So you say, just wait till we get chapter 39. But then you get to chapter 39, and Joseph is sold as a slave, and he's serving Potiphar, and the false accusation, and now he's put in prison. So at the end of chapter 39, we say, we'll just wait till you get chapter 40. Well, we get to chapter number 40, and nothing has turned for Joseph. Still in prison, he'd be there for 2 years, no friends, waiting for answers, wondering when he's going to get out, if he's going to get out. He's betrayed again after doing a favor to a guy there, and you begin to wonder, how does this turn out? In fact, the last verse of chapter 40, verse 23, pretty much sums up the next 2 years of his life. "Yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him." And you know, I've known believers whose lives were like that. I'm thinking of a young lady right now who lost her husband, and now the doctor says your child may have cancer. I'm thinking of a preacher friend, a dear preacher friend that I have that is in some very serious health issues that's not Chinese flu related, and he's fighting church problems on several fronts, and it seems like that it never lets up. And it might be good to review chapter 39 and what we talked about, principles for prison. And we talked about those three principles the last time. Don't demand to understand, and don't bow to bitterness, and don't fail to be faithful. And this is probably a good time after you've been sitting here for 2 years to review those principles. They still hold true. This evening, what I want us to do is I want us to visit Joseph in prison. And we've already preached on what to do while in prison. Joseph is still there. So tonight, I want us to get a pass from a guard. I want us to go down into the dungeon. And you'll find Joseph in a small cell, and there's probably a bed, maybe a table, maybe a chair. And when we sit down to talk to him, I want you to remember that this is a man that has a revelation from God that he's going to be the patriarch of the family. And I want you to remember that this is the man that was loved by his father. And I want you to remember that this is the man against whom there are no marks in the Bible against him. I want you to remember that this is the man who is the most complete type of Christ in the Old Testament. And he is still in prison. I'll give you five thoughts tonight from Joseph's experience in prison. Here's the first one. I want you to notice that Joseph is unjustly framed. I don't know if you've ever had occasion to go into prison, Brother Ken, Brother Eric, some of these guys go into every week. But when you first go into a prison, if you've never been in before, you're very alert. You're watching everything. You're trying not to stare at the inmates, but you are looking at everything else. You're watching the cells, you're watching the guards, you're looking at the security. You're looking at everything. And as we sit down with Joseph in prison tonight, I want you to observe a couple of things about Joseph. Under this, the first thing is I would say that he was framed. He was framed. Now, Brother Kim would tell you this. If he ever preached in a prison and had an occasion to talk to the prisoners, nearly every one of them would tell you that he is there unjustly. He wants to proclaim his innocence. Now, I happen to believe, and this is more libertarian than conservative, I happen to believe that the criminal justice system in our nation needs to be reformed. When 97% of federal criminal convictions are on a plea bargain, that's a problem. Why would 97% of people who are charged not be willing to go to trial and force the prosecutor to prove their guilt before a jury? But 97%, and I believe that prosecutors can use an array of tools such as stacking charges. And why should it be, I won't get off on this, but why should it be that if you go to trial and lose, your sentence is going to be so much more than if you take a plea? And that's the criminal justice system. But be that as it may, that's a whole different subject. Most men in prison want you to know that they were framed. They were set up. We had an overzealous prosecutor. I had a crooked judge. But something that says that I don't belong here. But when you look at Joseph and you talk to Joseph about his convictions, he was truly framed. There was no physical evidence that says that he has molested Potiphar's wife. There are no witnesses who could collaborate her testimony. There is no pattern of bad behavior that says, yeah, this looks like something Joseph would do. There's no prior arrest. There are no complaints in his employment record. There's no trial. There's no due process. There's no legal representation. So there is no question that Joseph was set up. He has been done a grave injustice. He is framed. I think one of the things that galls me as much as anything is injustice. And injustice can be in the form of a guilty man getting free or an innocent man being charged and wrongly sentenced. And in our justice system, is supposed to be set up so that it is the innocent that are protected. It is harder to convict a man because we want to protect the innocent. It would be better under our justice system, it would be better for a guilty man to get away than for an innocent man to be convicted and have to serve a sentence for something that he didn't do. But that is not the case for Joseph. He is in prison on trumped up charges. He's the victim of somebody that has nearly absolute power over his life. So he's framed. But here's the second thing that I want you to notice about him, is he's in fetters. Now hold your finger here. You've got to go to Psalm 105 to see this. So turn to Psalm 105, and I'll show you a verse here. Psalm 105, and as you turn there, and Andrew turns me up a little bit on the monitors here. Psalm 105, and here's a commentary on Joseph's experiences. Psalm 105 and verse number 16. Moreover, he called for a famine upon the land. He brake the whole staff of bread. He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. So that's telling you that when Joseph was in prison, that his feet are in shackles. He is literally in iron fetters. Probably every girl in here has watched the movie Anne of Green Gables. I've never seen the movie and never will. If you're a guy and you've watched the movie, I am so sorry. I know very little about that movie, but evidently Anne of Green Gables had a schoolyard nemesis and his name was Gilbert Blythe. And Gilbert Blythe was picking on her for, I believe, her red hair. In that movie or book or whatever it is, Anne of Green Gables, she makes a statement to her friend Diana. And here's what she says. She says, "I shall never forget Gilbert Blythe. The iron has entered into my soul." Now you're wondering what that has to do with Joseph. I'll tell you. The iron has entered into my soul. That is an idiom in the English language for succumbing to just utter depression and despair. I just give up. That phrase, "iron has entered into my soul," is actually found in the Book of Common Prayer. The Book of Common Prayer is a devotion, book of devotions and prayers that was put out by the Lutheran Church hundreds of years ago. And when they came to Psalm 105 in verse number 18, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. The Book of Common Prayer by the Lutherans translates that as iron entered into his soul. They actually got that from a guy named Miles Coverdale. Now, if you know the history of the English Bible, Miles Coverdale is one of the men who produced an English translation of the Bible before the King James. The year was 1535. It was 1 year after William Tyndale was martyred. And he had been commissioned by the king to produce an English Bible. And so the Coverdale Bible, it was the first complete printed English Bible. Coverdale didn't know Greek. He didn't know Hebrew. And so he mostly translated from the Latin Vulgate and from an old German Bible. And his became one of the seven English translations that preceded the King James. It was full of errors. It was full of errors is what it was. Well, when Miles Coverdale came to Psalm 105 and verse 18, he translated that as iron entered into his soul. And ever since, that phrase has entered into the English language to speak of difficult times. Now, listen right here. That is not the correct translation. Okay? And if I don't say that 16 times, somebody's not going to hear that, and they're going to go away and say, I corrected the Bible tonight. So I say it again. Coverdale was wrong. Book of Common Prayer was wrong. All right? That is not the correct translation. There are iron fetters around his feet, not his soul. That's what the verse says, all right? So I just want to make triple clear that Coverdale was wrong. Okay? Coverdale was wrong. Book of Common Prayer was wrong. Anna Green Gables was wrong. That's not what it says. Okay? What it said. But it's interesting how that phrase found its way into that movie, and it became a common saying. And maybe we could say, and you're going to misunderstand this. He has iron fetters around his feet. And it could be that that is symbolic of iron fetters around his heart and his soul. Maybe I could say it that way. Now see, somebody hears that and say, yep, he's correcting the Bible. Not at all. He is in fetters. He's in fetters. Here's the third thing. He's framed. He's in fetters. He was friendless. Friendless. You ever watched a movie where a guy's going into prison for the very first time? They're taking him in, and he's walking past these rows of inmates, and they're all eyeing him, and they're sizing him up. Carrying his blanket and his few belongings, and they're leading him to his cell where he's going to meet Bubba, his cellmate. And he's looking at them, and they're looking at him through the fence, and he doesn't know one soul in there, and every single one of them has just become his enemy. And some of them are going to try to molest him, and some of them are going to try to beat him, and some of them are going to try to rob him. Even the ones who will befriend him will do that for what they can get out of him, because in prison, it is every man for himself. And Joseph doesn't have an alliance. He doesn't have a gang. He has no kind of group to fall back on. The only other two prisoners that are named are the butler and the baker. They are not his friends. You would think that if you interpreted a dream for somebody and he gets out of prison, at least he could say a kind word for you. That doesn't happen. When he interpreted the butler's dream, he asked the butler to remember him when he got out. When he interpreted the baker's dream, he didn't ask the baker to remember him. And here's the reason why. You're going to be dead in 3 days. You can't remember me. You got your own problems to worry about. And the Bible says that the butler forgot him. Back again to chapter 40 and verse 23. The Bible says that yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. That there is a loneliness in prison that's not felt anywhere else. And there's many men in prison who have been forgotten by their friends and by their family, and they never receive any visitors. It is a lonely place, and Joseph felt it, because it's not just the butler, but it's his brothers that have forgotten him. He is friendless. And I don't know if you've ever been there before. Undeserved trial. Soul in iron fetters. Loneliness and forgotten. And I suppose you could tattoo "this too shall pass" on your arm. I don't know that that's going to do any help. He's unjustly framed. Here's the second thing about Joseph in this chapter. Not only is he unjustly framed, but he faces an uncertain future. You'll notice in verse number 5 that the story very quickly turns to the dreams of this butler and this baker. Both of them have strange dreams. In the same night, they're troubled by it the next day. And the reason why is because dreams were believed to be revelations. We want to know what it means. What is the gods saying to me through these dreams? And there's nobody there that can interpret. And whether they're right or wrong is not the matter. But they don't believe a dream is just a dream. We need to know what this dream means. The butler dreams. He's got a vine, a cluster of grapes. He sees himself pressing the grapes into Pharaoh's cup. Baker has a stranger dream. 3 baskets of bread on my head and birds are eating bread out of the baskets on my head. Now here's what struck me. Of the 23 verses in chapter 40, 15 of them deal with these two dreams. 15 of 20 verses are about dreams. And one of the dreams says that the butler is going to be restored. One of the dreams says that the baker is going to be executed. And Joseph is the interpreter of the dreams. But it reminds us that Joseph had himself been a dreamer too. In fact, the thing that got the whole ball rolling for Joseph was his dreams. I read back through those dreams in chapter 37. And there is one thing that stuck out to me. The dominant theme of his dreams is ruling. He's going to be a ruler one day. But so far, every step he has taken him away from those dreams. He's not ruling anybody right now. In fact, look if you would in chapter 39. Look at 39 and verse number 22. The keeper of the house committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. Whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand because the Lord was with him. And that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. When he goes into prison, he's in charge of the prisoners. But look at chapter 40 and verse 4. The captain of the guard charged Joseph with them and he served them. Now, I don't make as much out of that as most commentaries, but it seems like he's going backwards. And nothing in his dreams has come to fruition yet, and it looks increasingly like it never will. And when those two men told Joseph their dreams, you know that Joseph had to remember his own dreams. And when he tells the butler, you're going to be released and restored in 3 days, he has to wonder, I wonder if I'll ever be released and restored. And when he tells the baker that you're going to be dead in 3 days, he has to wonder, is this the end of the road for me? And I think that we have a long section describing these dreams just to remind us that Joseph has some dreams too. But sitting in prison, how hard do you imagine it is to still have faith in those dreams? How hard is it to still dream, to still believe God? He's unjustly framed. He faces an uncertain future. Here's the third thing. Joseph remained uncompromisingly faithful. And I keep coming back to faithfulness in this story, and I think for two reasons. One, it is so glaringly obvious in his life. And we'll look in a minute at how Joseph was faithful. But I admire the steadfastness of this man. When you think of the opportunities that he had to quit on God, the pressures that was on him to become like an Egyptian, and you look at how much this man can take and still keep serving God, I admire that. So it is glaringly obvious that he was faithful, but I believe we come back to faithfulness time and time again because it is glaringly missing in our own lives. You know, one of the hard things to do in the life of Joseph is to make it relatable. Yeah. And I try. So what we do is we talk about, you know, Joseph was in prison. And boy, when you're in your prison, this is what you do. And Joseph was under pressure. When you're under pressure, this is what you do. And Joseph faced great trials. And when you face great trials, boy, this is what you can do. But here's the problem. 99% of the people who will hear this will never face pressure and trials like Joseph did. I'd be crazy to compare my trials to that of Joseph. But I wouldn't want to compare our faithfulness to him either. I really wouldn't. I believe that the comfort and the ease that we live in has created a very soft Christianity. And our trials nor our faithfulness can stand up to Josephs. I want to be honest with you. There are very few Josephs in our midst. And each time you get a little bit of confidence in people, they'll show you what they really are. And all that confidence goes right out the window. Yeah. He's uncompromisingly faithful. You'll see it in three ways. First of all, he was compassionate. In prison, it is every man for himself. Every man has to protect his turf. Everybody has to watch their own back. You may join alliances, but it's all about getting some protection. Prison life does not teach you compassion. It hardens you. And a bitter man in Joseph's shoes could have easily ignored the sad countenance of those other two men. What do I care that you're troubled? But Joseph has not lost his heart for people. If he were bitter at God, he would have become bitter at man. These men offer him nothing. These men promise him nothing. He is made to serve them, not them serving him. But he still had a heart for other men. The trials have not made him hard. He's compassionate. I think another way that you see his faithfulness is he is confident. Look at verse number 8, what he says. They said unto him, "We have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you." That is a bold statement coming from a man who has seen his own dreams denied. It's a bold statement coming from a man who is sitting in prison. And prison can be a place of despondency. And a lot of men sit there and they have lost all hope. But though Joseph may have been disappointed, there is no despondency in his words. His confidence tells me that he still believes God. He's compassionate, he's confident, and then he is courageous. It's one thing to tell a man that in 3 days your head will be lifted up. It's another thing to tell a man in 3 days your head's going to be lifted off. That's what he said. Your head going to be lifted up. Your head going to be lifted up from off of your shoulders. And it's interesting to me that the baker, the second guy, he didn't tell his dream to Joseph until he heard the butler's interpretation. Once he heard the butler's interpretation, he thought, you know, maybe he has a good word for me. I'm expecting the same kind of message because my dream is a little bit similar. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to take some courage for Joseph to tell him that actually you're going to die. And when I read the dream, I don't see anything positive about it anyway. What good are you going to get out of three baskets on your head and there's a bird eating the bread out of the basket? How's that going to be any good? And the baker is probably apprehensive, but maybe Joseph has a positive word for me too. And Joseph says, actually, you're going to be hanged and the bird's going to eat the flesh off of your body. It's not very good, is it? The Egyptians were known for embalming and wrapping bodies like mummies. They did that to preserve them. And the reason they did that is because they believed that you needed your flesh in the afterlife. And for the butler to be hanged and for the birds to eat his flesh, well, that's more horrible to him than just dying. And that's the message that Joseph had to have the courage to tell. Now, here's what I'm pointing out to you tonight. Joseph's character has not suffered. Hadn't suffered. You can make a case for back in chapter 37 that he's confident there and he's courageous there and he's compassionate to his brothers there, and the trial has not changed him. His character is still the same. He's faithful to God, we know that, but he's true to himself. Faithfulness means that he never wavered. He wasn't circumstantial in his Christianity. And oh, how the church desperately needs some men like that in this day. Uncompromisingly faithful. Here's my fourth thought tonight. Joseph is ungratefully forgotten. You find that in verse 20 through verse 23. And by the way, the butler would eventually remember him. Look, if you would, in chapter 41, verse 1. It came to pass at the end of 2 full years. Verse number 9. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, "I do remember." Well, it is about time. 2 years later, and he finally says, "Oh yeah, by the way, there is this fellow that I met while I was down there." I think that probably in the days after the butler's relieved, Joseph probably wondered, any day somebody's coming for me. Probably tomorrow. Probably be Monday. But as the days turned into weeks and weeks turned into months, that hope would die. And the realization would sink in that nobody is coming. And isn't it curious that Joseph could foresee the butler's release, but he couldn't foresee his own release? And it could be that God let Joseph sit there for 2 years and experience that disappointment so he would learn the valuable lesson not to trust in man. Yeah. Jeremiah 17 and verse 5, cursed be the man that trusteth in man and that maketh flesh his arm and whose heart departeth from the Lord. Psalm 118 and verse 8, it is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. Man will fail you and man will disappoint you, but you must not carry that disappointment over to God. When I read these chapters, Brother Joseph, I try to look at the chapter and I try to capture the essence of the scene in a statement, or the big idea. I look for the big idea. And the essence of the chapter for me this week was disappointment in man and confidence in God. Man is going to disappoint you, especially if you try to lead them, but your confidence must be in God no matter what man does. He is ungratefully forgotten. Here's the last point I'm done. Joseph had an unshakable faith. Flip over to Hebrews 11 real quick. Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews Hall of Fame. Hebrews 11, look if you would, in verse number 22. By faith, Joseph, when he died, made mention of the departing of the children of Israel, and gave commandment concerning his bones. Comes at the very end of Joseph's life as he was dying. The family has been brought to Goshen. They've all settled down. His last request before he died was, one day God's going to take you out of here and take you back to Canaan. And when you do, you take my bones. You take my coffin with you. And you bury me in the promised land. You see, that promise God had made to Abraham back in Genesis 15. You'll be there 400 years and I'm bringing you out. And Joseph still believed that. And for all of the trials that Joseph suffered, his faith was still strong. And I was struck by reading back through his life today at how he keeps mentioning God, how he keeps mentioning God. Come back to it, Genesis 49, or 39. Look at verse number 39. Or chapter 39 and verse 9. Joseph speaking to Potiphar's wife. He said, there is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? In the midst of temptation, God is foremost in his thoughts. Look at chapter 40. Chapter 40, verse number 8. They said unto him, we have dreamed a dream, there is no interpreter of it. Joseph said unto them, do not interpretations belong to God? This is the very next time that Joseph speaks in the narrative, and he still has God in his thoughts. Look at chapter 41 and verse number 15. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, there is none that can interpret it. I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. Here's the next time that Joseph speaks, in 2 years. But Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. It's been 2 years languishing in prison, and the very next time he speaks in the narrative, he mentions God again. Look at chapter 41 again in verse number 50. Down to verse number 50. Unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came. Look in verse number 51. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, he hath made me forget all my toil in all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. He has 2 sons named Manasseh and Ephraim, and God is in his thoughts when he names them. Look at chapter 45. Chapter 45. There's others, but these are enough to give you an example. Chapter 45 and verse number 5. Speaking to his brothers, find that they were reunited. He reveals himself to his brothers, verse 5. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. Look at verse number 9. Haste you and go up to my father and say unto him, thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not. He says God's been working behind the scenes all the time. Whether he's dumped into a pit, whether he's being tempted by a seductive woman, where he's interpreting dreams, wondering if his own will ever come true, whether he's reunited with his brothers. I'm telling you that his focus is on God. You know what faith does? Faith looks at life from a higher perspective. And we know that one day faith will look back and say, I see God. But what faith does is faith right now looks forward. And says, I still see God. It's one thing to have faith because I see how it already worked out. It's another to have faith and say, I don't know how it's going to work out, but I see God. And right now, most Christians are looking to government as their God. And they're looking to the news media to know how I should feel today and how I should behave. And they're living a circumstance-controlled life because that's what they are focused on. It'd do you a world of good tonight to turn the news off and just see what happens next. Live, die, whatever. Do your world of good. There are some tonight who are more stronger and more resolute than ever before. There are some tonight who are more fearful than ever before. Why don't you take every circumstance and say, I see God in it. Somehow, some way, somewhere, God is doing something. And God give us a faith that cannot be shaken. Just stand with me tonight.